You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 308.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Kevin.
Hi.
What's happening?
Nothing.
Not nothing. You know what's happening?
What's that?
The mayor's here.
The mayor is here. We do have a special guest. Hello.
Hello.
Back from traveling again.
I know. It's been a busy couple of months. and hopefully I'm back in Chickentown for a couple of months.
Never
now.
Leaving Chickentown again. So you're here to bring us up to date on your latest travels, and we have some junk to talk about beyond that. First, however, Cornflake. How about National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
Did you know that April is Adopt a Ferret Month?
For some of us, that's every month.
Yeah. Not me, though. I'm going to skip that.
Adopt a Ferret Month.
Month. They get a
are
whole
we,
month.
Are we celebrating the whole month?
No, I just thought I'd bring it
oh,
up.
Oh, just throwing that in extra.
Okay. A bonus. A National Whatever Month.
Just be warned, everyone.
Nobody told me that I couldn't talk about ferrets.
There could be more disgusting creatures than usual slithering about out there.
But now you know why.
Watch out.
I thought it would be fun to talk about how on April 5th you should be like the Indigo Girls. Specifically.
We're all just stunned into silence. How do we do that?
Get Out the Map. They have a song called Get Out the Map, and it happens that April 5th is National Read a Roadmap Day. Read a roadmap on actual paper.
Okay.
There's a national day for this. Somebody tell me why.
So this is some map enthusiast out there does not care for our current modern
and tremendously useful
maps. Yeah, functional and practical. They want to go back to paper.
Yeah.
The giant map that unfolds. I still have those. I've got a stash of those, you know, ready to go.
Yeah, I think I dug some out of my car a couple cars ago and never bothered to put them back in.
Yep.
Every time I find mine, I go, oh, this might be useful sometime. And then I lose them again. That's pretty much my relationship with...
This could be valuable collector's items.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my maps are disgusting. They've just been, you know, flopping around a car. They're all soaked in coffee and whatnot, I'm sure.
Yeah. I guess we always see people using maps on The Amazing Race, and then that's always a big problem. It causes a big argument when people are trying to navigate in foreign countries.
Oh, they use the paper maps? Because they don't have phones, right?
Right, they're Amazing not allowed Race, to use their phones.
Yeah, you can't use your phone. So they're still reading from maps.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot that they did that.
Yep, and that seems to cause a lot of arguments.
So the frustrated person in the back seat has the map. Then the angry person driving in the front does not have the map.
Correct.
And communication is not good.
Right, and the cameraman isn't allowed to help.
Cameraman loves it. This is great. This is all going on TV. These people are about to strangle each other.
Yes.
And that's what it was like for all of us.
Yeah.
Not long ago.
Except we didn't have a cameraman in the car usually.
Yeah, well, usually. I remember being baffled by the roadmap as a kid.
I remember just reading them for fun. When I was a kid.
Wow. You know, there were other books and things.
Yeah, I didn't clue in on that right away.
Here, kid, read a map.
That looks like a book. Oh, it's a dictionary. Okay, let's read that.
My favorite author was Rand McNally.
Yes.
All right. Well, you know, I might actually celebrate this because I've got the maps. I haven't looked at them in a long time.
Yeah. Sure.
Let's break out the maps. I'm on board for this. Say, Mayor, did you use a roadmap to get down to Maryland?
No. I assume that the pilot on the plane used all sorts of sophisticated instruments to get there.
I think they were unfolding a giant map in the front of the plane. That's why they closed that door. They don't want you to see.
Oh, that
co-pilot's got the map. They're arguing. There's a camera guy filming the whole thing.
The pilot grabs the map and is juggling that and the steering wheel.
Who folded this last time? You did it wrong. don't know what's going on.
Oh, no, it's been upside down all this time.
You were down. We're in New Zealand now. Nice job. You went down to Maryland. Yeah, the first time I flew on an airplane ever, first time I ever flew anywhere was to Maryland.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know when or where my first plane flight was.
It was an abduction?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was blindfolded. So we had you on the show just a few weeks ago because you went to your big Doctor Who convention out in California. Now that's now you're back from Maryland, and you were down there for...
another Doctor Who convention. This is not not common for me that I would go to two in 1 year, especially so close together.
I'm starting to think you're a fan of the show.
I might be.
So what's going on down there? What was this?
So this was called Regeneration Who.
Yes.
This was the fourth year that it had taken place, but it wasn't really on my radar until earlier this year because they announced that Peter Capaldi would be there. And he's the actor who most recently played the Doctor, and he left on the most recent episode, which aired Christmas Day, and regenerated into a woman.
Yeah, I'm actually aware of this. I don't know about the Christmas part.
Right.
I know The Bear Who Slept Through Christmas. I know certain Christmas shows.
Now they're filming with Jodie Whittaker, who will be the first female Doctor.
From Family Affair.
you say so. With
Johnny Whittaker.
Okay.
Family Affair and Sigmund and the Sea Monsters.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Very close. He could slide right into Doctor Who now, you know?
I guess, yeah.
Just flash his ID really quick. They'll let him right in. Oh, this will be great. So you're there, you want to see Peter Capaldi,
our
most recent Doctor Who. So down you go, to Maryland.
Down I went to Maryland. I had friends both in the D.C. area and who were coming up from Orlando, who I knew I would get to hang out with there. So that was nice.
All the Who people are gathering.
Yeah, I mean, Peter Capaldi was worth the price of admission. It was just great to see him interviewed. He was just really charming and, you know, took his time with each question, and especially when kids ask questions, he was just really charming about that.
Aww.
I would not have allowed children to be there.
I did not pony up for a photo op or an autograph, but many, many people were there to do just that, including several of my friends. And from what I hear, he was very kind to everybody, asked everybody's name, you know, wanted to have a little conversation with them, you know, really took the time to give them a good experience.
To engage with people.
Your friends might still be in line.
Well, that was one of the issues. This was obviously a much bigger guest than this con had ever had before, and there were line management issues. I didn't run into those because I wasn't standing in line for the big ticket guests. I did, however, get an autograph from Colin Baker, who was the sixth Doctor.
That's another Doctor Who.
Yeah, and the reason I did this is because one of the first Doctor Who conventions I ever went to in 1996... I got my photo taken with him.
Okay.
Some friends of mine and I, dressed up in Renaissance Fair garb, for some reason we decided that this was a good idea.
Yeah.
And we got our
Doctor Who's time traveling all over the
place,
right?
That's true.
So any period in history is appropriate.
Yes. That is true. I don't think we even put that much thought into it at the time. We just thought, hey, we all have Renaissance Fair garb. Wouldn't it be fun if we all dressed up?
Good thing I was here to explain how the show works.
Yes, I think I'm finally catching on that this is a time travel show. Anyway, took this photo up to Colin Baker and said, hey, Colin, I had this picture taken with you. And he was just delighted by it. And, you know,
nice.
Really took a long time looking at it and told me I had barely changed, which was very nice. And he autographed it for me.
You so made his day.
Yeah, I had a nice little conversation with him as well.
Excellent. Any other wacky highlights of the convention you wanted to share with us?
Well, I cosplayed.
I gotta hear about this.
And this is the first...
The rubber chicken suit.
This is not the rubber chicken suit. I dressed up as a villain from Doctor Who, actually from the Sixth Doctor's era.
A villain?
Named the Ronnie.
Okay.
That was a lot of fun. I didn't get a lot of recognition because I think this was from the classic series, and the fans who were at this con were mostly... came into it with the new series, but I did...
That's how you weed out the people who don't really know the show.
I did my own little bit of gatekeeping here.
And super fans like me and Cornflake.
Well, of course, you know, my friends did know who it was, and one random guy came up to me and said, hey, I love your Ronnie costume, and then we had a little conversation. So that was cool.
Now, why was the Ronnie a villain?
She was a Time Lord like the Doctor, and she was just kind of... she was a scientist, so that's another cool thing about her, but she was just kind of amoral. Like, she liked to do her experiments, and she didn't really care about the consequences of them.
Now, was this the Ronnie that Eddie Money was singing about?
Just like Ronnie sang, Be My Little Baby. I don't think so.
I finally understand what that song means.
That might be a different Ronnie.
Any other big fantastic guests down there at Regeneration Who?
Well,
which I just remembered what it was called.
Well, the Fifth Doctor, who actually is my favorite Doctor from the classic series, Peter Davison. And all of his companions were there. I think this was a first, that all of the actors who played his companions were there with him, and they had them all on a panel together.
How many companions have there been?
I would...
A single doctor can cycle through several companions.
Right. The first doctor went through, like, 8 or 9 companions, probably, and then there have been fewer as the series goes along. But Tom Baker had quite a few, and Peter Davison had quite a few.
Dozens of them, then, creeping around.
Definitely dozens of companions.
All right, we're not getting to a definite count until... Mm-hmm. Like later in the show.
Okay. I'll add it up, tally it up in my head while you guys talk about other things. And I'll have a number for you.
Yes. If anyone wants to hear more about your Regeneration Who experience, you've been like running all over the network.
Yes.
Filing convention reports.
Right. I will also be giving a con report on Earth Station 1, and they had me on Earth Station Who again just to talk about my experience there.
Look at that. This is like the third show. We're at the end of the line for you making your Regeneration Who report.
But yes, the Earth Station 1 network likes to put me to work when I go to a convention, and I'm happy to do it.
Of course. All right, cool. And actually, your trip to Regeneration Who actually feeds into what we're doing for the rest of the show.
Would you say it's an inspiration?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, because it was Peter Capaldi was there, and with Peter, what's the other Peter?
Peter Davison.
You had two Peters who were former Doctor Whos.
Correct.
And it occurred to me that we had not done a top 4.5 list in a long time. We used to do that like every other week.
Yeah.
That was our thing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What went wrong? At some point we went off the rails and we hardly ever do 4.5 lists anymore.
Well, it's hard to keep coming up with topics.
Yeah,
sure.
We're just so tired.
Requires too much thinking.
I think we were off the rails all along.
That's point.
Quite possible.
So anyway, finally, first time in 2018, I believe, we have both assembled a top 4.5 list, and the subject is Peter.
Commencing countdown. 4, 3, 2, 1.
What? 1.5?
The top 4.5 list.
All right, the subject is Peter, the name Peter.
And we didn't say whether we were going to include or omit Pete's or Petey's or...
I made the personal decision to stick with Peter.
As did I.
All right, so, yeah, so this is a pure Peter list.
Purely Peter. Excellent.
I saw Pure Peter list once opening for the Pure Prairie League. That was a fantastic show. Oh, soft rock. Oh, like you've never heard, never experienced live.
Wow.
As only they could deliver. All right, so this is our Peter list. The one rule that we set, nobody that we know.
Sure.
So you're not just going to hear our close personal friends who happen to be named Peter. Sorry, you're not on the list.
All right. I had a neighbor named Peter growing up, but he's not on the list.
Actually, sadly, yes, he is. I'm going to scratch my number 3, and I'll have to come up with somebody new now. If you see that right there, the mayor's neighbor.
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
I had a crush on a triplet named Peter.
A triplet?
Yes. There were these, back when I was a teen, there were these boys that were popular because they were triplets.
Mm.
And I think I liked Peter. I'm not sure. I might have liked one of the other two
and
not known it. Right.
All right, Cornflake, the subject is Peter. What do you have at number 4?
Now, if I say Peter Mulvey, do you know who I'm talking about?
Peter Mulvey is a folk singer, Boston area based at one point, singer-songwriter,
yes,
who I've seen live at least once.
Did you see him at a concert venue, or did you see him in the subway system? Because that's where I know him from, is he used to play all over the Boston Tea.
I saw Peter Mulvey at Oberon in Harvard Square. He did a Tom Waits tribute show there. They did the Rain Dogs album with our friends, the Lipstick Criminals were there, you know, dancing.
I had no idea that he did that.
I was gonna joke about that. Oh, you saw a folk singer at Oberon? Did he have burlesque dancers?
Yeah,
I guess he did.
Matter of fact, yes, he did.
Yes.
It was wonderful.
He's a fun performer to watch. He's got that percussive guitaring style where he's strumming the guitar, but also occasionally knocking on it to make a beat.
I'm not surprised that you're a fan.
Yeah, I frequent those folky circles, so of course I've seen my fair share of Peter Mulvey, and I think he's fantastic.
That Tom Waits show might be the only time I've actually seen him live. Although what I remember from that show is like 2-3 songs in, and this is Peter and his band, they're on stage, and then of course the Lipstick Criminals, the burlesque dance troupe, they're just flopping all over the room, you know, and a few songs into the show, Peter stopped and said, hey, everybody, up here. We're up here. So he noticed that the audience seemed rather distracted, and not all eyes were focused on the band. All right, that was your number four. You know what? I'm going to match you musician for musician, and let's start out strong. All right, how about Peter Torque?
Ooh, we have a match.
There's a match. That's a power move.
Yeah.
Torque at number four.
Yeah.
I put him all the way up at number two.
All right.
I like him a lot.
Peter Torque.
Yes.
He was a monkey. I know you've seen Peter Torque live because you went to one of the Monkees' 50th anniversary shows.
Just a couple of years ago.
2 years ago, yep.
You sent me off to see the Monkees.
Yes,
and I loved it.
Put you on a bus to Rhode Island. Go see the Monkees, I said. And he's also been at some of our local conventions many times as well. I think he either currently or used to be Connecticut-based.
I remember having a lot of fun watching him on the Monkees. He always was
on the show.
Yeah.
Well, he was like the goofy one. He was the
exactly.
funny one. Yeah, which I don't think was the case in real life. He was actually one of the more serious of the four.
Mm-hmm. And was a musician before joining the Monkees.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very serious musician. And he's part of like the New York folk singer-songwriter scene. Multi-instrumentalist. Oh, they put him on banjo with the Monkees sometimes. He can play guitar, bass, keyboards. He plays all that stuff.
And he does more banjo work these days. And he was developing a style that was Motown and bluegrass when I saw him in concert. And he put them together to make Mo-grass.
Yeah. He has his own band called Shoe Suede Blues, which I've never seen.
Mm.
And there's a Monkees tour happening this year. There's a Mickey Mike Monkees tour. And I think they're all on good terms these days, all three of them, as far as I know. But Peter just wanted to do his own thing this year.
Yeah, I can respect that.
And they're doing a pretty limited tour this summer, and sadly, they're not coming up this way.
Oh.
Yeah, so I don't think we're going to see Mickey and Mike.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but Peter is not in that tour anyway, but he was a monkey.
Truth.
So that's my number four pick. Is Peter, that's your number two pick?
Yes.
All right, good job. How about number three?
It's a food. It's a bus line. And it's probably best known from the lead character from a play first staged in 1904 that became a Disney classic.
Yes.
But when it comes to references to Peter Pan, what I like best is a tune that came out in 2016, so I'm still talking music, and recent pop music, which I don't tend to follow, but there's this song called Lost Boys that came out in 2016 by an artist known as Ruth B, and it was deemed to be 2016's strangest Hot 100 hit. This tune just kind of stuck right out. If you were out and about and you heard it, it didn't sound like anything else that was current. No harmonies, no drums, just her voice and a piano playing this really slow, pretty melody.
I never heard of it.
Yeah, you don't hear that happening nowadays.
I don't hear anything.
And I never heard of Peter Pan the food. What exactly is that?
Peanut butter.
Yeah,
oh.
That was a peanut butter brand.
Okay.
Is it still?
Yes.
You can still get Peter Pan peanut butter.
Yes.
So I do remember that.
Peter Pan peanut butter and Peter Pan bus lines are the two things that got me through my college years.
The same company produced the bus line and the peanut butter.
I sure hope not.
I think it was. Oh, yeah.
That makes me nervous.
Yeah, it made sense because they could handle their own distribution. Now, what did Annette Funicello... Oh, she was Skippy.
Skippy, yeah.
Yeah, Skippy peanut butter. That was Annette back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I couldn't think of any stars that plugged Peter Pan.
Who were the big stars that came out for Peter Pan peanut butter?
I think...
Like
all right,
Emmanuel Lewis?
Who was... So on Perfect Strangers, there was Bronson Pinchot and...
The other guy.
I think the other guy might have plugged Peter Pan peanut butter.
Really? Yeah. What's his name? He has three names. We just saw him on The Leftovers.
Yeah, I don't know.
That dude. Mark something?
It is Mark something.
Mark David Chapman.
No.
It's something like that. Mark Lynn Baker?
Yes.
Is that?
Yes. Mark Lynn Baker.
Mark Lynn Baker.
Yes.
Who's the
Might
other guy?
Have been a spokesperson for Peter Pan, but don't take my word for it.
That sounds
you
so
know
insane.
That,
how could that possibly be the case?
You know that I have credibility issues.
Well, if we're going to start a rumor, I cannot think of a better one.
I barely remember that Peter Pan peanut butter existed.
You're claiming that Mark Lynn Baker was the Peter Pan peanut butter spokesperson.
Super briefly. So briefly.
Very briefly.
That there's probably no record of it.
If I type that in right now,
I gotta see what comes up.
Internet.
If Mark Lynn Baker was the promoter for Peter Pan peanut butter or any peanut butter at all, I'm gonna fall off my chair.
Mark Lynn Baker. Mark Lynn Baker, Peter Pan peanut butter. That is an option to search for. Let's do that. Cornflake was right about something.
Whoa! Something really obscure.
There's a YouTube clip of Mark Lynn Baker, Peter Pan peanut butter.
And there's more than one. There's like three different ads.
A whole bunch, yeah. Why wow. I do not remember this at all.
It wasn't a fever dream.
It says 1989. Okay, he's the new Annette Funicello.
I guess.
Yes. I'm going to go home and watch all of these.
Now, who sold Jif?
That was Choosy Moms Choose Jif. Yeah. I don't know if they had
the Choosy Moms
celebrities.
Like Joanna Kearns? Meredith Baxter Byrne?
I don't know.
I think Meredith Baxter Byrne probably made her own peanut butter.
There's Superman peanut butter back then, too. Remember? They gave Superman a peanut butter in the 80s.
All that my parents would buy was like the all-natural,
freaky, hippie,
gross
disgusting
brand. Yeah, exactly.
Where like a weird layer would form at the top.
Yes. it was like Teddy brand, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, you can't deal with that.
No.
No, you want the super processed.
Ultra sugary.
Creamy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all sugar and glop.
Yeah. Okay. Am I among creamy me peanut butter fans? Or
I'm not really a peanut butter fan, period, but I definitely did not like chunky peanut butter.
Mm.
I like either, although I haven't had any recently either. But now that I know that it's endorsed by Mr. Mark Lynn Baker, try and keep me away. Also, I didn't know that Peter Pan was still in business.
Yes, wow. I know I've seen that on the shelves.
Okay.
I think of Mark Lynn Baker every time I see it.
Every time.
Now I will too.
Outstanding. All right, but number three is that song that nobody knows. All right, good job.
Thank you.
All right, my number three. Oh, you know, I have another musician on my list. Let's knock all these musicians out of the way right now, because how about Peter Garrett?
Of course.
As in Midnight Oil.
Aha!
You know, from Down Under.
Yes.
Who finally came back to us last year. Midnight Oil, one of the greatest bands in the world.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. Unless you've seen them, you do not understand how amazing Midnight Oil is.
People, and he's mesmerizing to watch.
Oh, well, he's 11 feet tall.
Yes.
Yes. And loud.
He dances like a deranged robot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was what fascinated me the most.
Yeah, Midnight Oil, they were out of business by like 2001, 2002, and then they went away for 15 years, mm-hmm. and then we got to catch them on their reunion world tour last year. And I didn't know until the reunion tour last year, I had totally missed, in 2016, Peter Garrett released a solo album. And I had no idea. Peter and the band were so far off my radar.
Right.
Because they went away.
The mm-hmm. first time I'm hearing of this.
Yeah. He did a record without the rest of the Oils. There's a Peter Garrett album, mm-hmm. solo, called A Version of Now.
Do you have it?
Yeah.
Of course.
Is it good?
Yeah.
All right. Of course it is.
It's interesting. It's cool because it's different. You know, it's not that band.
So he didn't do any solo recordings before or during the band?
I don't think so. Because he joined the band very young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Midnight Oil was together in the 70s.
We
didn't. That band had been around for like 10 years mm-hmm. by the time anybody in America knew who they were when Beds Are Burning came out. And he's such a crazy singer. He's got that wacky voice.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't sound like Russell Hitchcock, also
right.
from Australia. They have all kinds of singers there.
Oh, they'd be very different.
Yeah, if you lined up Russell Hitchcock and Olivia Newton-John.
Kylie Minogue.
And Kylie and Peter Garrett. Yeah, very, very different singers they have down there.
Sure.
But when the band hired Peter Garrett,
mm-hmm.
there was a quote, again, in one of those articles I used to read back in the day, where somebody else in the band was saying, well, he couldn't really sing, but
he had the stage presence,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they said he was big enough to move the amp, and and he was smart enough to read a contract, and he looked fantastic.
Yeah.
So we wanted him.
Well, I like his singing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it works. All right, so that's number three for me, Peter Garrett from Midnight Oil.
We already talked about my number two pick.
Oh, yes. We had the match.
Yes.
Which was Torque.
Peter Torque.
So what does that mean? Are we back to
Let's
me?
Let's go back to you for
back
number two.
Back to me for number two.
Yes.
All right, number two. How about from the world of Rankin Bass? Because this is the Easter season, right? What about the 1971 from Rankin Bass stop-motion animated classic Here Comes Peter Cottontail.
Yes.
Ooh.
So that specific version of Peter Cottontail you're talking about.
Yes, that's the only one I care about. Because that's the version where Peter Cottontail is Casey Kasem.
Yes.
That's the voice of Casey Kasem.
And Irontail, his nemesis, is Vincent Price.
I didn't know this.
Vincent Price as the evil Irontail, the exact opposite of a Cottontail.
Right.
The exact opposite of Casey Kasem.
Yes.
Yes. Vincent Price.
Yeah, they were bitter enemies in real life. Oh, yeah.
I would not want to be watching them square off. I think
Vincent
Price
did a bottom 40 list.
Oh, wow.
Every week. Yes, on Pirate Radio.
Counter Casey.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great cartoon. And they're traveling through time. That's Peter Cottontail.
There's a lot going on in that one.
Gets in a time machine, which is piloted by a French caterpillar.
Yes.
Named Antoine.
For no reason.
And they visit every other holiday all around the calendar, trying to fix Easter.
Yeah, we got to watch that.
I thought you were going to say, we got to find a caterpillar who can take us to all the holidays.
Yes, that too.
Time-traveling caterpillar.
Yeah, don't just get yourself a time machine. I hope when you were at Regeneration Who, were you trying to convince everyone we've been doing this all wrong?
We need a caterpillar.
On Doctor Who?
Oh,
They use that phone booth thing.
Yeah, they use the TARDIS, which is a British police box.
That's no fun. You need like a big balloon thing with a worm.
Yeah.
From France.
Does the caterpillar sing?
Oh, yeah. He has a big number.
Big song and dance number from a French caterpillar. Where's Peter Cottontail? Number two?
Mm-hmm.
That was my number two pick.
So we're on to number one.
You know I love all those freaky Rankin Bass shows. Number one, yes.
Not a musician, but a song that came out in 1992.
Oh, I think I know what it is.
Yeah, do you?
I do. I like this song, too.
You must be an XTC fan like me.
I certainly am. I was thinking of this song. Not on my list, but I thought of it.
I was delighted by this song and anything I heard by XTC back in the 80s and then the early 90s.
You should probably say the name of the song.
Yeah, The Ballad of Peter Pumpkinhead.
Of course. I remember it well. I think there's a documentary about XTC out there.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. I'll look into that.
XTC versus Adamant.
They made a documentary out of the They Might Be Giants song. They really did hate each other in real life, just like Vincent Price and Casey Kasem.
I had no idea.
Andy Partridge wrote a song for the Monkees' 50th anniversary album.
Yes, he did. This is all coming together.
So I just remember being a huge fan of The Mayor of Simpleton.
That's a great song.
Not hearing anything from XTC for a while after that. And then suddenly all over the radio was this Ballad of Peter Pumpkinhead. And you have to admit, if you look back at the early to mid-90s, there was some wacky stuff on the radio. Mm-hmm. There was all kinds of just unusual, bizarre tunes. It was an anything goes kind of time. And even then, the song stuck out as being very unusual. I looked into the story behind the song because I was kind of curious what would make somebody write a Ballad of Peter Pumpkinhead. And he had carved a Halloween jack-o'-lantern. And after the October festival with jack-o'-lanterns was over, he just took it and stuck it on a fence post in his garden. And he walked past the pumpkin each day, and he felt kind of bad about the way that it was just kind of withering away and decided to write a song about it and dedicate it to him. And
I did not know that story.
It ends up being the song about social justice that comes from a decaying pumpkin on a stick, essentially.
Yeah. All right, that's a good pick. And yeah, we'll have to look into that. I'm pretty sure there's a documentary about Andy Partridge and XTC.
Cool.
All right, that's a good one. Where am I, number one?
Yeah.
Number one, this is definitely someone that we have spoken of on the show. I think it was on a show that all three of us were on, actually, many years back. A great character actor who has inspired many, many cartoon sound-alike voices. Oh. And just one of the great voices of all time. Peter Lorre.
Yeah.
You know? Who, speaking of Rankin Bass from Here Comes Peter Cottontail, I was thinking of Mad Monster Party,
mm-hmm.
where there was a character named Yetch, who was like the Weasley creepy assistant on the island full of monsters.
Yeah, it's like the Igor.
Yeah, the Igor type. And he actually looked just like Peter Lorre. Which they did a couple times, because at the Warner cartoons, there were Warner cartoons where they would have the Peter Lorre character, like the little evil mad scientist that would be building the monsters or whatever, would look and sound. And I think they even called him Dr. Lorre.
Yeah.
Wow. Some of them.
Yeah, they were not being subtle. And he's one of those guys where the kids today, by which I mean anybody under the age of 60.
Wait a minute.
For, doesn't know much of actual Peter Lorre. We just know the stuff inspired mm-hmm. by Peter Lorre, and we know that voice because we just grew up on all the cartoons where there would be a Peter Lorre type. As yes. a matter of fact, I have a little 4.5 list within a 4.5 list here.
It's all folding in on itself.
Inception.
We are folding in because I've got a little quick 4.5 list of favorite Peter Lorre cartoon characters.
Excellent.
Peter Lorre inspired. And yeah, Yetch from Mad Monster Party is a classic Peter Lorre voice at number 4. Number 3, I'm going Morocco Mole, creepy assistant to Secret Squirrel.
Yes!
Back in the day.
He's a criminal. He's a mole. I loved him.
A mole wearing a fez.
I love Morocco Mole.
You cannot beat that. From the Drac Pack, one of the enemies of the Drac Pack was a Toad. Little Weasley Toad monster with the Peter Lorre voice. Number 1. Oh, from the Flintstones. Remember the Gruesomes? The family of monsters that moved in next door to the Flintstones? They were on several episodes of the Flintstones. It was like an Addams Family Monsters type.
Was this like a late in the series addition to try to spice things up?
I don't know. It was like an occasional special guest star.
Interesting. Yeah,
the Gruesomes. And the guy was weirdly gruesome. Mm-hmm. And he had the Peter Lorre voice. And number 1.5, though, of course, we have to go. And this came up when we did our Monster Serials episode several years ago. But Booberry.
Booberry.
Yeah.
Of course, has the Peter Lorre voice. And I believe we deduced on that show that Booberry is the ghost of Peter Lorre.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's just a scientific fact.
You can't disprove it.
All right, Cornflake, top of your list, what do we have for number 1.5?
I need to check my notes here.
On your Peter list. Wow, this is a stupid list.
None of my entries have a list unto itself. You're making us look bad.
I'm trying.
I didn't mean to pick so many musicians. I just couldn't help it. Maybe it's a Peter thing.
There are a lot of them.
Peters are just meant to be musicians,
there
evidently.
There were a lot of potential Peters who were musicians on my list also.
Yeah, I didn't hit them all either, but I had to get this one in, and that's Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, Peter Gabriel, of course.
Lead singer and founding member of a 1970s rock band.
The Oak Ridge Boys.
Genesis.
Oh, Genesis.
He wasn't just the lead singer and a founding member. It turns out he was also their flautist. I didn't know this.
Yeah, those prog rock bands, they enjoyed an occasional flute, didn't
they? Yeah,
they totally did. Another thing I didn't know about him in his years of Genesis, I never really paid much attention to it because Genesis is such a different band without him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they went poppy.
Yeah.
Post-Gabriel Genesis.
They went in two different directions, and what I didn't know is that while Peter Gabriel was in it, he did all these bizarre costume changes.
Oh, yeah, they were weird. Back in the day,
and told
70s.
These, like, comical dreamlike stories and would dress up with bat wings. And it kind of sounds to me that he was kind of like the original Lady Gaga. I'm thinking, I would have loved to have seen this. I have to admit, I'm more of a fan of Peter Gabriel's music from the 90s. I loved the Us album with Steam and Digging in the Dirt. But to be able to maybe find a caterpillar named Antoine and go back to the 70s. I get to see one of these concerts back before Genesis was what it is now. I think I would have really loved to have seen that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he has his first 4 solo albums, and they're all called Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, they're all self-titled.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they have...
What a nut.
Yeah. People refer to them...
Yeah.
People tell them apart by the picture.
People
cover art.
Informally call them Car, Scratch, and Melt.
Yes.
And his 4th solo album, Geffen Records, just pretty much begged him, please call it something other than Peter Gabriel. He still called it Peter Gabriel, but they overrode him, and it was called Security in the U.S. And after he had to name his album something other than his name, he just picked 2-letter words like So, Us, and Up. Us was the one with Sledgehammer, and... I knew that it was a number 1 hit for him. What I didn't know is that it knocked Invisible Touch by Genesis off the top spot.
All right.
That's cool.
That was also the album with Big Time and In Your Eyes, made forever famous by John Cusack and the boombox over his head. And to think, you know, the reason we have all of this is Peter Gabriel. So, of course, he had to be the very top of my list.
Yeah, I've seen Peter Gabriel in concert a couple of times. First time
the
I saw...
The WOMAD tour?
The WOMAD tour, yeah. That was a big wacky festival that he was headlining. So that was sort of a stripped-down version of his real show. You know, that wasn't as elaborate as the first time I saw him. It was 1993, I guess. Arena tour. Because his shows were crazy. They were just so elaborate and theatrical. And he wasn't doing costume changes and stuff, but there were props and effects. His stage, well, he had a stage on each end of the arena. So he had two stages with a runway connecting them. There were like conveyor belts on the runway so that things and band members could just kind of ride back and forth.
That's a great idea. More people should do that.
On the runway. And things would come rising up out of the stage on either side, and things would come down from the ceiling. It was a visual spectacular.
As sure. if I needed more reasons to put this man at the top of my list.
Yeah. Peter Gabriel, that's a fine, fine choice for the top of the list. The top of my list, however, is the correct answer.
You're just making me feel bad.
I can't imagine.
You're going to agree when you hear Cornflake Peter Brady.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Of course.
I won the top 4.5 list. Peter Brady.
I'm going to let you win.
Thank you. We've been rewatching the Brady Bunch lately.
Yeah.
So the mayor and I have been working our way through the entire series on DVD.
Yeah, we're on season 4 now.
We're getting there. We're in the home stretch now. Middle of season 4. There are 5 seasons, of course. And yeah, some of these episodes I have not seen in decades.
Sure. Some of the early ones I barely remembered.
And the nice surprise is that it's just also great. Every episode is just a delight.
It holds up.
It really does.
In its own way, it does. I mean, it was always out of its time a little bit, but it's goofy, very entertaining.
There's goofy old sitcoms that can be a chore to try to watch again. Brady Bunch is a goofy old sitcom and still viciously entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it'll surprise you.
I thought of them, and I thought of you guys, actually, recently, when I watched my February movie of the month, which was The Incredibles.
Mm-hmm.
That house that they live in, the cartoon of the house that The Incredibles live in, looks like the Brady Bunch house.
No, I don't remember that.
You have to go back and look at it.
I'm going to rewatch it before the sequel comes out,
check it out. When you look at that house, you're going to go, Brady Bunch house, because they had a house that I could have only, wished to have ever lived in. Didn't that house look cool?
Sure. The house is still there. You can go see the house in California.
I got to do that.
It's just somebody's private house, but you can go look at it.
They don't mind if you come around and gawk.
Actually, they're not terribly friendly to visitors.
Right?
Based on our buddy Ken's experience from TV Guidance Counselor. He went out and visited the Brady house and somebody yelled at him to go away. The big window, on the second floor in the front of the Brady house, that's actually fake. They put that fake window up to shoot the exteriors for the show. So there's actually not a window there. There's some fascinating Brady trivia for you. I finally met a Brady last year, and it was not Peter Brady. It was Greg.
Of course,
met Greg Brady, Barry Williams, last year. However, I think we've mentioned this on the show before. I was standing in the room when Christopher Knight, Peter Brady, called the company where Ed and I were working, Ed from Sponge Awareness. Ed picked up the phone, and Peter Brady was on the other line. Ed took a call from Peter Brady, and I was standing right there, freaking out.
It's because Ed has mad connections.
Wasn't he on The Surreal Life or one of those celebrity shows?
Yeah, he did a few reality shows because he did his own show. I think he met a girl on one of those reality shows, like Celebrities Locked in a House.
Yeah.
And then they did a show called My Fair Brady.
I forgot about
him and his new wife.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
I did not see it.
I'm surprised.
But I saw plenty of actual Brady Bunch, and I have assembled here a top 4.5 list of the best Peter Brady moments.
Oh, here you go again.
I can't believe it.
This is showing us all up.
The second top 4.5 list within a top 4.5 list of this top 4.5
list.
You really
went overboard.
And when I say showing us all up, I mean me.
I put a lot of work into this 4.5 list, Cornflake. I did it for you.
Oh, wow.
Honorable mention, just missing the 4.5 list would be Peter's playing with the ball and it bounces down the stairs, smashes the vase.
Tom's favorite vase.
Don't play ball in the house, Peter.
Right.
So here we go. Number 4... Peter's dressed up as a sunflower girl, has to go out and try to sell cookies and recite the sunflower girl poem.
Yes.
To the grumpy dude at the door.
Of course.
Number 3, pork chops and applesauce.
Yes.
Number 2, Peter puts on a fake mustache so he looks older and can go on a double date with Greg.
I remember that one.
They go to the drive-in movie. That plan went off flawlessly, as I recall.
Oh, no, yeah.
What could go wrong? Number 1... Peter has an exact lookalike double that he happens to run into at school.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to that one yet in our rewatch.
We haven't gotten to the fake mustache or the lookalike yet.
Oh,
I don't remember the lookalike.
There's a lookalike. There were several lookalikes on the Brady Bunch, but the other ones were relatives. Like Alice had a relative that happened to look exactly like Alice. Mm-hmm. And then there were like the Brady's grandparents or great-grandparents that looked exactly like Robert Reed and Florence Henderson. But
this was a stranger.
The Peter Brady lookalike was just a kid at his school who happened to look exactly like him.
Well, that could be a recipe for trouble.
I'm guessing that was one of the episodes that Robert Reed got angry about because it was so stupid.
Yep.
And fired off an angry memo to Sherwood Schwartz. Well, I loved it. That's number one. And number one half, of course, Time to Change.
Yes. Of course.
There's your Peter Brady specific top 4.5 list. And Peter, of course, Peter Brady has to be at the top of our top 4.5 list of Peters.
So say we all.
That's exhausting. All right. Good list.
Yes.
I have an honorary mention.
Okay.
Honorary Peter. Let's do this quickly.
Enya, whose real name is Peter.
Yes, that's right. I forgot. Enya is, her real name is Peter.
Yeah.
Most people don't know that because we just made it up just now.
Exactly.
All right, coin flip. I think this has gone on long enough. Please get us out of here before we tell any more lies.
Well, I came up with a top 4.5 list of ways to say you can find the Flopcast on the internet. At number 4, you can go to flopcast.net. At number 3, you can go to Instagram. It's the_Flopcast. You could go to facebook.com/Flopcast. At number 2. Number 1 is Twitter. Our handle is @Flopcast. And oh no, I ran out of ways to find us on the internet. Oh, wait. Go to your favorite podcast catcher and perhaps leave us a review or a rating. That can be number half.
Yes.
We would love to hear from you.
Good save.
Thank you. I put a lot of work into that.
For number 1.5, we're all going to have to put on fake mustache. Go on a date with Greg. All right, kids, we're not even going to do a real list of honorable mentions. I know we've left out a lot of very important Peters, but send us your favorite Peters that we did not mention, because I know there's a bunch of them, and perhaps we'll do a follow-up on a upcoming Flopcast. Meanwhile, Mayor, thanks for joining us. Welcome back from the nasty state of Maryland, where everybody's named Peter.
Everybody, yeah.
Especially all those Doctor Who actors.
Absolutely. Everybody I know was named Peter.
I knew it. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and Peters.
ESO, 7 years of keeping it really geeky.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man. I just bought it.
Hey, you guys!
How exciting. Spoilers.
Come! 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
The Earth Station One Podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstationone.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
Karn Flick, this is the secret after show.
Here we are.
Hello, people that listen to the whole show. You made it. You know who did not make it?
The mayor.
The mayor of Chickentown is gone. She bailed out.
Would you say she's all petered out?
Yes. Yes, I would. But we're here, and we have some follow-up work to do, and that is your crazy idea, which was Mixtape March.
We've introduced each other to some music.
I gave 10 songs to you that you did not know that I thought you would like. You did the same for me, likewise. So today for the Secret After Show, we're going to run through the songs that I provided to you.
Yes.
You've listened to these 10 songs. I thought you would like them. We're going to try to move very quickly.
Okay.
but what do you have?
You should know that I really enjoyed these songs, so much so that I've been playing them on repeat in my car and thinking, I need to have Kevin pick out more music for me to listen
wow,
to because this stuff is great.
So already I feel like I've won.
Yes.
I'm going to declare myself the winner of Mixtape March right now.
Way to go. There weren't even any rules and you still won the game.
All right. Any particular thoughts pop out at these 10 songs?
Who was singing with the Hooters in Boys Will Be Boys?
Funny you should ask. Did that voice sound familiar?
It did.
There's a woman's voice
yes.
in that Hooters song, Boys Will Be Boys. And that's the reason I picked out that song. There's so many great Hooters songs. But I picked out that one because of that guest vocalist on that song. And I was wondering if you'd be able to pick out the voice or not. That's someone that you know, and that's someone that the Hooters worked with quite a bit.
It's got to be none other than Cyndi Lauper.
That, of course, that's Cyndi Lauper.
They sound great together.
Yeah, yeah.
What a fun song.
Time After Time was written by one of the Hooters. They worked on a lot of the early Cyndi Lauper stuff. They worked with her quite a bit over the years. And yeah, she popped up for some guest vocals on that Hooters song.
I really appreciated Jesse Hansen's references to the great city of Boston in her Back to Boston song.
Yeah, that was fun for the local people like this. That's somebody we discovered, Jesse Hansen. She was opening for our buddy Kim Jennings, and she left town a couple of years ago. She's Los Angeles-based these days, but yeah, she's good, Jesse Hansen. And that was a very Boston-centric song with some fun local references in it, which I thought you would like.
Her sound sensibilities remind me of something that an Eddie from Ohio fan would appreciate. So if you like Eddie from Ohio, I suggest you check out Jesse Hansen. I also liked Blues, B-O-S-T-O-N, Boston song about how you can be from Boston even if you're not originally from Boston.
Yeah, that's Blue, B-L-E-U. Yeah, that's just such a crazy, fun, anthemic celebration of being from Boston. And I love that it's so fun, and yet it includes a spoken word
yes.
part from Blue's own funeral
yes.
in the middle of the song, and somehow it works.
It's fantastic. If that's not the part of it that I'm going to pick, I'm going to take a clip of this song, and I'm going to make it my alarm for waking up in the morning. It really is a rollicking tune.
Yes.
I see what you've been raving about with Diane Birch with Rewind.
Oh, Diane Birch.
I don't know enough George Harab songs, and after listening to Never Knew, I know. Now I know. I need to hear more of them.
Yeah. I haven't heard much George Harab in a few years. I haven't seen him in person in several years because he hasn't been to Dragon Con in a while. And I knew him mostly from Dragon Con and from various skeptic conventions.
And from driving all the way to Pennsylvania to see him once.
George is Pennsylvania-based. And yeah, he did a big special crazy concert weekend down there a few years ago. And several of us road-tripped to Pennsylvania from parts very far away. Yeah,
Let me tell you, George is
great.
After hearing that song, I totally get it. I really liked hearing Amy Mann as part of The Both with
yeah,
the song Milwaukee.
The Both is a duo of Amy Mann, who, of course, we know quite well, of Boston's own Till Tuesday way back in the day, and she's done so much great work. Yeah, The Both is Amy Mann and Ted Leo together.
It's Amy Mann like I've never heard her before. It really showcases her versatility.
That song Milwaukee, I could not resist picking. Just it's so fun and catchy sounding. And also, there's a reference to the Fonz. Right at the beginning of the song, she mentions, because they're in Milwaukee,
right.
and passing the statue of the Fonz, which there is a statue of the Fonz in Milwaukee, of course.
I need to listen to it again.
Yeah.
I can't claim to be the Cleo superfan that you are, but I do appreciate them, so I liked that you picked a Kay Hanley song.
Yeah, Kay from Letters to Cleo, and I picked something from Kay Hanley's first solo record, I believe, from 2002. Oh.
It's great. The song is Fall.
Yeah, she did some interesting non-Cleo type stuff on that record, but beautiful songs.
Now, I gotta say, Kevin, if I ever need to make a breakup mixtape, I'm gonna hire you.
Yep.
And definitely the Bengals, I'll Set You Free, and Mika Polly, I Haven't Even Started With You, are gonna be on it.
Yes, yes. Well, yeah, there were some thematically similar songs on this, not intentionally. So even Diane Birch Rewind you could throw in there, right?
Absolutely.
I'm really breaking some hearts on this mixtape of mine, aren't
you? You really are. I thought you were trying to fire me.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought that was such a beautiful Bengals song, and not one that people know. That was not a hit. That was from the Everything Bengals album. That was the one that Eternal Flame was on, late 80s.
The Bengals song sounds like it should have gotten popular. I don't really know why it didn't.
Yeah, that one probably could have been a hit if they'd released it as a single. I think you're right. They did pretty well with Eternal Flame, though. As I recall.
Now, Mika Polly, I had heard as an artist before, but I hadn't heard I Haven't Even Started With You, and I Haven't Even Started With You surprised me. I know her as more of a folk artist,
mm-hmm.
and I Haven't Even Started With You sounds more, like, soulful.
Yeah, Mika, she came out of the Boston folk singer-songwriter scene, and she was a student at Harvard when I first met Mika many, many years ago. but she stood out as something special way back then. She has such a rich kind of smoky voice and so
some
emotional.
Serious vocal chops.
She's amazing. And I think she became a mom a couple of years ago, so she's kind of been laying low, relatively speaking, the last couple of years. But I hope that she resurfaces sometime soon. I think she had twins a couple of years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Mika's busy.
I would say. And that brings us to my favorite of them all. And they were all good, so it was tough to pick a favorite. But I loved Andrew Kerr's Saturday Night.
Oh, yeah.
With a title like Saturday Night, I would have never expected what was coming in this song.
That's probably the only one that is really a funny song that I put on this.
Yes.
I don't know if you'd call it an outright comedy song, but certainly the most humorous of the stuff I put on your mixtape.
Some of the lyrics in the George Harab song and in Blues song were kind of funny, but Saturday Night is a full-on laugh. It's about spending way too much time at a copying store.
Yes.
It's very clever.
Yeah.
Clever enough that ultimately I chose this song as my favorite of the bunch.
All right. Well, that was my mixtape march for you.
Oh, see, I kind of almost feel like you should have gone first because now there's
all downhill
this,
from
right,
here.
Right, there's all this hype to live up to because you really did put together a fantastic list.
Now the pressure's on.
Oh, boy. I guess I deserve it. It was my idea,
right? Let's reconvene on next week's Secret After Show, and I'm just going to let you tremble and worry and wonder for a week what I thought of your songs.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.